the second topic I'm going to speak about has to do with the evolution of combined modality therapy, particularly neoadjuvant therapy for resectable rectal cancers. So this was a study that was done at our institution by Chris Dolinsky, one of our fellows, and it emerged from the fact that we had done a study E1297, which was a phase 1-2 trial of infusional 5-FU and biweekly oxaliplatin in T3 or N1 rectal cancers. And in that study, we showed the path CR rate in the upper 20% range, which is consistent with that seen from a CALGB trial as well as quite a number of other studies. What's the rationale for thinking about oxaliplatin? Well, we know that the oxaliplatin with fluoropyrimidines is active in metastatic disease and also active in the adjuvant setting. As with other drugs, it's a potent radiosensitizer in cell cultures and mouse xenografts, and also because the toxicity profile, unlike with irinotecan, is not overlapping with 5-FU and pelvic radiotherapy, one can achieve maximal dosing of the drug as a single agent. So what we did was, when we completed the ECOG study, is to offer patients on an ad hoc basis oxaliplatin off study. Over about a 4.5-year period, we saw 114 patients with preoperative treatment for rectal cancer. This consisted of 5-FU and oxaliplatin in 32% of patients, and about 68% of patients elected to receive standard, usually infusional 5-FU. We only have 24 months median follow-up. About 42% of the patients actually underwent an APR, which seems high, but I think it's because of our referral. We get tough cases generally sent to us with low lesions. The high lesions are done in the community. We looked at path CR rate, and I'll get to this in a moment. That is, path CR is in the eye of the beholder. I'll show you some grading systems, but I think much of the variability in path CR rates, whether in liver resection or in rectal cancer, depends on the system one uses. And even when a path CR doesn't necessarily imply viability versus non-viability. So if one looks, the path CR rate in the entire population was 36%, which is in the ballpark of that seen in other trials for the patients who got oxaliplatin, and 13% in 5-FU, which is exactly that seen in other trials and very close to that in the German trial of preoperative chemoradiation therapy. And so there are a lot of other statistical analyses that were performed, but what we also showed, and I'll extend this data in a moment, was that in the patients who had achieved a path CR rate, at least at 2 years, all of those patients are doing extremely well. Only one patient progressed in the 2 years after treatment. So what other data do we have, and where are we going with this? Well, the CALGB study was reported previously. These patients got weekly oxaliplatin with infusional 5-FU, and the MTD for oxaliplatin was 60 milligrams per meter squared. Of the 32 patients who treated, their path CR was 25%. Again, comparing backward and historically to about a 10% expectation with infusional 5-FU.
Thanks, Dan. I want to focus our discussion on some of the rectal cancer issues that were just discussed. And how do you make the decision in terms of whether to use adjuvant therapy after chemoradiation therapy?
We're essentially always getting either an MRI of the pelvis or an endoscopic ultrasound or both. And if nodes meet the criteria for looking positive, essentially, regardless of what we find in the pathologic specimen, we're recommending postoperative chemotherapy to those patients.
Anybody take a different approach? Neil?
For us, anyone we define as needing preoperative neoadjuvant therapy by definition is committing to a full course of postoperative therapy, because we're selecting the neoadjuvant patients based on their risk of both local failure as well as distant failure. And we, like Rich, use endoscopic ultrasound and other pelvic imaging and physical examination to define those patients who are at risk based on having a T3 or T4 primary or regional nodal involvement. So for us, anybody who's not having an operation up front as their sole therapy will get a full package of neoadjuvant as well as adjuvant treatment.
And what about total duration, particularly in a patient who's going to get oxali pre-op?
It's a tricky scenario. Well, first of all, I should say that I, like Rich, am not giving oxaliplatin preoperatively outside the context of a clinical trial. For the patients that do get oxaliplatin preoperatively, the question then is how much post-op oxaliplatin can they receive? And since my post-op therapy is 4 months typically, the amount of pre-op oxali that they've gotten doesn't really impact my ability to give that 4 months of post-op therapy. So it doesn't really alter it.
Axel?
I think, first of all, the German data, the German trial, did include mandatory post-operative adjuvant chemotherapy. So all the breaking down subgroup analysis of YT0, whatever patients really refers, is in the context of patients had post-operative adjuvant therapy. So we cannot yet say there is a group of patients where we don't use post-operative adjuvant chemotherapy. So the question of what kind of therapy should we use, and I follow Rich's approach saying that we have established FOLFOX as the premier and best adjuvant chemotherapy in colon cancer. Why would rectal cancer be different? In patients with lymph node involvement, which we identify pre-treatment, and I think there is a clear rationale for using FOLFOX in the adjuvant setting in patients where we are sure that they had a lymph node involvement before they ever started therapy, neoadjuvant therapy. The question now is, what about those clear stage 2 patients where we use neoadjuvant therapy? Should those patients be considered eligible, or should they receive FOLFOX adjuvant therapy? And again, I follow Neil's approach, saying all patients that we treat in the stage 2 setting with neoadjuvant therapy should follow the FOLFOX protocol, because we don't have any other data. So this kind of endorses the NSABP approach of including a stage 2 patients in the adjuvant setting.
Yeah, and the other point, of course, for rectal cancer, the outcome of a stage 2 is not good.
It's not as good as in colon cancer.
Absolutely.
For various
Charlie
reasons.
And then Al.
I think we have to be a little careful when we say clear stage 2, because the German study shows us that we overstage almost 20% of the patients. So presumably there will be patients who not only didn't need preoperative therapy, but also don't need postoperative FOLFOX. And I think that's something, we probably can't change that, but that's going to be the fact.
Correct. But the good news is that FOLFOX, although it's subjective, we don't kill patients with FOLFOX, 0.5%, which is more or less what we consider acceptable.
Al? What I think is really important now is we have a paradigm shift. In the past, where most data were postoperative radiation, the mindset was, we're not improving survival, we are reducing the risk of local recurrence. With pre-op therapy, and now a suggestion that the CR rate may matter, this may actually have a significant impact on our survival curves for both stage 2 and 3 patients. And I would agree, you know, the reason the two trials are linked with R04 and 5204 is not only do we have to see if we have added benefit from adjuvant chemotherapy, and for many rectal cancer patients, we would presume this is critical because the survivorship is different, but equally important, we have no idea what is the long-term sequelae for rectal cancer patients receiving this intensive amount of therapy, which has not been done before. We already know in some series that long-term morbidity is very, very significant for patients. And so these trials are designed to integrate a prospective assessment of how patients fare over time. So not only looking at acute toxicities, and we clearly need more data about acute toxicity, but also the long-term sequelae.
Howard?
I'm going to disagree with Al a little bit. Not that I'm not in favor of doing the trials and enrolling patients on the trials, but since there's nobody here who's a radiation oncologist, I'm going to say they sold us a bill of goods by trying to make us do rectal studies. I think that we know these drugs work in colon cancer. The biology of rectal cancer is really not that different. And why do we have to do 1,000-patient studies? We need some phase 2 trials to show us the toxicity of combined chemo radiation and that it's acceptable, and then take the same principles in colon cancer and go onward. And in fact, I think that's why we have bad accrual to rectal cancer, because the community's out doing that already.
No, I would disagree with that, because I think you really have to make progress in the rectum and not simply transpose what you know to be a truism in the colon.
Well, how's it different?
What is unique in the rectum? I think saving the anus is a noble endeavor.
That's a very noble endeavor. I'm all for it. Most of the people who go on the rectal trials are not candidates. Most of them do not influence whether they get an APR or not. That's a very small
segment. But I think that's nihilistic. I think that's,
you don't need a 1,000-patient randomized study to do that.
That's our ultimate goal. That as therapy improves.
No, I think the ultimate
goal
is to eliminate surgery altogether.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I completely agree, and I would be the first to hail that as a major development and be in the unemployed ranks.
But why do we need to do rectal studies to show that combination chemotherapy works again? I mean, we do need to know what the toxicity is of the combination of radiation.
Why do we need to do preoperative studies in breast cancer? By the same token, the rectum is a unique situation, not only anatomically, but you're eye to eye with the tumor. You can sample it to do arrays to develop a taxonomy. I mean, this is a wonderful opportunity. That's why we ought to be doing trials in the rectum.
Well, I'm not against doing the biologic correlate studies. We could do it in the colon, too, if you can reach it.
Just a quick question to you, Howard. Are you using oxali and chemoradiation neoadjuvantly off study right now?
Mostly not.
Jordan, final comment?
My issue is that as we're getting down further and further in the local control, improving local control and the path CR rate may not make a difference in survival as much because we're getting to such a good end. But my comment was largely to point out that that's more true if the surgeons that do the surgery are the right surgeons. Because actually, if we had a randomized trial that showed what we know about the surgeon who performs the surgery, the FDA would probably approve specific surgeons for the thing. If you thought of surgeons as a drug, surgeons who have experience are so much better than surgeons who don't have experience that they would be approvable.